You're listening to the Managing Partners Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Daisy. We interview top lawyers about how they're growing their firm. Hey there, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Managing Partners Podcast. I'm Kevin Daisy, and I'm your host. And like I say, I'm always looking for the best guest for the show to bring you guys the best content. And today I have someone that you hopefully know or have read about. This is Mike Michalowicz, author of Profit First, author of his newest book, All In. So we'll be talking about that today. Mike, welcome to the show, man.
Kevin, we pulled it off, man, with all the tech problems. We're here. We made it happen. It's good to be with you.
I appreciate it. Yeah, we're experiencing some Wi-Fi issues here at my office, so hopefully this works out well. But I appreciate your patience, Mike. And go Hokies.
Yeah, go Hokies. I don't know if you can see right over my shoulder here. There's the old Hokie helmet. So yeah, go Hokies.
Excellent. Yeah, so yeah, Mike's a Hokie. My business partner's a Hokie. My wife's a Hokie. So love going to games up there. I think we've already scheduled one for this year. Take the kids. So good times.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm heading up there too for the Rutgers game. I go every year. I meet up with my old college buddies. And this is the first year we're bringing our significant others too. So I'm looking forward to it.
Uh-oh. That could be some trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I want to kind of dive in to, obviously, anyone listening, if you don't know what Profit First is, it's totally changed our business. We have used it in three businesses that we have. And so pick up Profit First. Mike's wrote many other books before that that are also very great if you run a business. And Mike, so you know, this podcast, our guests are owners of law firms. And we market for law firms, but I run a business just like they do and just like you do. And a lot of these things are can apply to any type of business, especially this book right here. So I want to talk about All In. This is Mike's new book, All In, How Great Leaders Build Unstoppable Teams. Yeah, tell us a little bit about why this book and why now.
Well, a little known fact, I used to be an expert witness. I used to be in the forensics space, computer forensic investigations. Did some pretty big, significant criminal trials. Well, you know, I worked with a lot of law firms. You know, it's big ones, White Case, Proskauer, Rose, are some of the firms that come to mind right away. What I noticed is everyone in those organizations had their own little fiefdom. You know, while they had one unifying name, they were all basically independent individuals. And the motivation wasn't necessarily there beyond, I just want to be successful in my career, but there wasn't kind of a unifying thing. And it wasn't just that. I've seen it across all types of businesses. What unifies a team? And in particular, if someone doesn't own a business, I mean, everyone here owns a law firm, so there's a motivation because it's a possession of yours. But for the rank and file, if you will, for my colleagues, you know, what's their motivation? When I had my forensics firm, one day I said, oh, I clearly need to have the X on the map. And I ran some numbers and said, my God, we can do $10 million in revenue. Krull was our biggest competitor at the time. I said, you know what? I think we can take them down and we can be the preeminent computer forensics firm in this space. So I called my colleagues together. It was back in the brick and mortar days. We had 30 people. I pulled everyone in and I did the whole cheesy effect I had on a whiteboard. I wrote $10 million in big bubble letters, but put a post-it note, one of those mega post notes over it. And with great flair, I said, this is the year we take down Proskauer Road. This is the year we take down Krull. This is the year that we achieve. And with flair, I ripped this thing off, $10 million in revenue, expecting the team to be unified and fired up. And the response was crickets. Right. And I'm like, yeah, right. None of that. I'm like, whoa, there was no cheering. I'm like, why isn't everyone excited? This is so big. My assistant, her name was Patty. She came to me and said, Mike, we achieved $10 million in revenue. You get the bigger house. You get the new car. What about our visions? And I said, what do you mean? Because you know someone here who's learning, trying to learn Spanish. There's another person that's looking to buy a house. Another person is fighting cancer. Everyone has an individual vision. And what I realized from Patty and started to practice is the job of most leaders or the goal is just of most leaders is to set a corporate vision. But the goal of great leaders is to set a collective vision. What is everyone looking to achieve? To understand the holistic thing. And yes, the corporation, if we achieve whatever that number is, that's a big deal to me because I'm the owner of it. But my colleagues have their own individual dreams. I'm not here as a Make-A-Wish Foundation. I'm not here to buy that house or whatever, but I'm here to realize that is the most important thing in their lives and that their career is a pathway in part to it. And how can I support that? How can I block and tackle for them? That became the core foundational awareness for why I wrote All In. And it goes on, and I studied different techniques, different ways that we can move from good leaders. I think most people are good leaders. I considered myself to be meh, and I aspire to be great. And I think we all can achieve that if we look at leadership in a new way.
Yeah, I love that. And I think I got like two chapters left in this. I didn't quite finish it like I hoped before we talked today, but I got through the majority of it. And yeah, the things you're sharing, the stories in here, I got past the story you just told about the 10 million and how excited you were about it.
Yeah.
And we've done the same thing with our business in the past. We came out with a $100 million number a couple of years back and we were like, yeah, and same exact experience. And we have changed things.
Right.
We've changed things so much since we did that. And I will say it just to run a good company, to have the things you wanted to hit those numbers or anything like that. If you don't have a good team and culture, you're going to struggle to get there.
100% agree.
And we, our people, yeah, our people, our team, us, like we spend most of our time at a job working more than we are sitting around home or hanging out with family. So it's got to be a place that people want to be at. They want to feel that they have ownership and make a difference. And if not, they're just getting a paycheck. That's probably the most dangerous thing in a company, to have a team of people that don't care about the company or anything that happens to it. And it's just dangerous.
Yeah. There's, I don't like these labels per se, but they are helpful of this concept of A players, B players, C players.
Yeah.
But I think they're helpful in that we can use as a definition. An A player is someone who's all in the business. And the reason is they, the business and their job is part of their identity. So as they perform and work, they see that as a reflection of who they are as a human being. Now, here's the thing. I believe every person on this planet is an A player when matched up with the right job. If I could care less about something, I'm not into construction, for example. So if I was in the carpentry space, for example, I don't think I would do well. I'd probably be a C player. I'm confident I would be. Because I don't see that as who I am. I don't see it as a representation of my identity. But when people see that as a representation of their identity, we naturally bring the most of ourselves to it. So this goes on to what's called fit. And a fit is where the internal makeup of the person matches up with the external expression of it. What most businesses do is we say, well, I need to hire someone for a position. I call it a title, right? So I need to hire a receptionist. And within that title, there's many responsibilities. Back in the day, at least, it was answering the phone, meeting, greeting, walking customers, maybe it's doing data entry and stuff when there was downtime.
Yeah.
What we do is we try to match up talent to title. And that is a mistake because I may see myself as a very social person. So my identity is strong with connection, greeting people, talking, but I don't see myself as a data entry person or meticulous. That may not be how I define myself. So I'll excel in parts, but I'll fail in others. And what I used to do in my own business, say, well, I hired a receptionist. He was great at meeting customers, but my God, he was horrible at data entry. So not a good receptionist. Well, that's not true. I have a great social person that's great at social skills, but not talented or not desirous of meticulous components. So the solution in fitting people in our organization is not matching their talent to their title. It's matching their talent to the tasks. So an organization maybe has 15 different titles moving on in the organization, but within each title, you may have 10 tasks. You have 150 tasks. Let's break out and look at those tasks and match up our individuals to the tasks. And the true story, the receptionist, it was a woman at our office and her name was Petra. And what we did with Petra, we said, you're really good at greeting people. You're not good at this meticulous stuff. We actually have a sales role. It's kind of the farming, maintain relationships. We'd love you to consider also doing. And she's like, yeah, I love people. So she continued an element of the reception part. She continued or started an element of the sales part and she excelled. Someone who would have been defined as a B player or C player because she couldn't complete all of the title requirements became an instant overnight A player because she could meet the task components.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And I know for us here, we've learned a lot over the years that we've been in business, but trying to find someone for skill only is you know, we go for cultural fit, core value fit first, and then the passion's there for what, you know, the job that they're looking to do versus trying to stick, you know, just trying to stick them somewhere. And if you know, hey, they're going to crush it, all these things, don't just give them all these other things that are going to distract them from that and pull away from that. And they end up being a C player because they're doing things that they just don't want to do. They're not passionate about. But I would say you can relate it to like school, right? I hated math with a passion. I failed math and then got C's finally and just kind of squeezed through. Science, history, just generally interested. Love it. Straight A's all the way through, right? Or think about a sport or music. If you like to play the guitar, but you're forced to play the piano, you probably won't do so well because you don't care about it. So,
right.
So I think, yeah, within your business, lawyers listening out there, you want your folks to be passionate and excited and have ownership, even if they don't have ownership of the firm. But this book is really a lot of tips, a lot of different, I like how you do, Mike, you kind of always break things down with like, you know, an acronym or like, you know, you can do this, and that. So to make
it right. Right. Yeah. I use in the book, I used an acronym I made up. It's called FASO or FASO. We talked about the F, which is fit. There's also ability, safety, and ownership. I'll touch on ability because it plays into what you're sharing. Yeah. And we'll talk about sports. So what's so interesting is there are three forms of ability in individuals, and most corporations only evaluate one, maybe two. So the one we evaluate the most is called experiential ability. Well, experiential ability is what I've done in the past is indicative of my future. So if I was great in the past at something, I'll likely continue to be great at in the future. So what do? We look at resumes and say, what was this person good at in the past? But experiential, there's a challenge. It only is reflective of a person's experience. Therefore, they may be good at things that they don't even know they're good at yet. The second thing is, as their experience grows, that is the measurable, and therefore they'll dictate a much higher salary. They'll say, well, listen, I've been doing this for 10 years. I'm really good at it. You got to pay me a lot. Mm-hmm. So hiring people with a lot of experience can be very costly. There's also a risk. Sometimes they have experience, but it's not the experience you need. And therefore, you have to unlearn them or untrain them and retrain them in your way of doing that experience. So it can become costly. The second level of experience is called, it's called innate ability. Innate ability is how we're wired internally. And there's great systems out there, StrengthsFinder and Myers-Briggs and Predictive Index. These are tools to say, this is how this person's wired. And you can put them in an environment that plays into their natural wiring. And sadly, very few companies do that. I encourage many companies, as many possible, to look at that. But there's a third component, which is the most important component of ability, which almost no one looks at, except for one industry. And that's called potential ability. Potential ability is, what could I do in the right environment? Mm. Now, the industry that really leans into this is actually the sports industry. And I'm encouraging traditional industry outside sports to take this.
Love it.
Now, I'll give you a cool personal story. I played sports in college at Tech. I was never necessarily a particularly good athlete. I played lacrosse in high school. I was adequate, but I wasn't great. I went to a lacrosse camp. There's one here in the Northeast where I live. It's called Hobart. And back in the day, this was a big time Division III lacrosse college. And I think 300 or 400 student athletes went there, high school students, to learn. Here's what was happening. As I was practicing and other athletes were practicing, the coaches would tap some of the athletes on the shoulder and say, hey, you're really skilled at this one thing. We want to bring you to another field so you can dig deeper into this. Hmm. And those students that were selected for that, where some of them were tapped on the shoulder and said, you're really good at this, we'd like to bring you to another field. What they were doing is they were educating and supporting, helping all the athletes, including myself, but they were cherry picking athletes that were demonstrating their potential. I was not one of them, but the other ones were picked. By the end of our 5-day camp, three students were invited to play at Hobart Lacrosse, which was elite lacrosse. Again, I wasn't one of them. I did play lacrosse at college, went on to have a very good career there. I would say a big part of it was because I went to this camp. What's so interesting in this story is everyone learns, but as you observe the people learning, you can cherry pick the people with the most talent, potential talent, for your organization. So we, as attorneys, what we can do is run camps. You can go to your existing team and say, hey, we're going to do some special education around this type of litigation or this type of discovery work or something. It's voluntary, but you can come for its education. The people who raise their hand and show up are showing curiosity. The first level of potential is curiosity. If you're not curious about lacrosse, you're not going to the lacrosse camp. So you're already out because you don't have that internal interest. Curiosity then goes on to what's called desire. Some people show up and say, you know, interesting, but not for me. It's kind of like skydiving. I think I would do it one time, but I've also sensed that I would never do it again. So I'm curious, but I don't have desire. Desire is demonstrated through repeated action. So if someone keeps on showing up for that skydiving, they're showing desire. The highest level is thirst. Thirst is where I can't quit this. This is now part of my identity, which, as we said a bit earlier, when someone sees it as part of their identity, that's the definition of an A player. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do with our law firms is run workshops. You can do it for your internal staff. You can do it for external staff and say, you know, people that aren't with you yet and say, hey, we're putting on a workshop for the public or other attorneys on such and such subject. Make sure you pick a subject that's important to your organization where you're looking for talent. Teach what you want to hire. And if you don't have the talent, bring in an outside expert who can teach it, but teach what you want to hire. Look for curiosity, desire, and thirst. And when you see desire and thirst, those are the folks that are the A players are showing their potential.
That's awesome. I love that a lot. And I wanted to say one of the stories in your book, you know, you talk about for recruiting potential, I think too, is you mentioned Home Depot, I believe, right? Where they have the workshops where you can build stuff. And they're literally looking for people that could work the floors at Home Depot as well as part of that
Isn't
program.
Isn't that crazy?
That's really crazy. I've been to those. They've never hired me before.
And they haven't hired me, right? Which is so interesting. The best part of this method is the candidate doesn't know they're a candidate. So Home Depot puts on these Build a Birdhouse workshops. I've shown up. I brought my kit. Yep. Build a Birdhouse. And what they're doing is they're teaching you. As they teach you, you have more appreciation for Home Depot. That's where I do my shopping. So they ingratiate you with a store, but they have some observing saying, who is curious, who is desirous, who is thirsty. And when they see desire and thirst, they'll tap you on the shoulder and say, we would love to hire someone like you. You're so good at this. Have you ever considered working at Home Depot? So it's a recruiting mechanism. And see, that's what we can do too. Yeah. The challenge is most law firms, most organizations, when it comes to recruiting, we say we're looking to hire. So what do people do? They put on the best face they can. They present themselves in the way they expect us to show. But when it's education, we just show up to learn. We aren't putting on a face. We're not faking it. We're actually doing it. So people bring their real self to educational events. They often will bring not a true representation of themselves to interviews because they want to make a certain impression. So use this tool, just like Home Depot, to find people who have that raw potential talent.
I love that. And I think the potential is, and you know, being able to see that potential, and then we've done it here because we have three companies and we've had folks that we've taken from the company that now run their own company. And we're always looking for like, who's the next potential? How do we measure that? Who are we coaching up and training and stuff like that? That's huge. And you know, the other thing real quick with hiring and recruiting, my wife's a recruiter, actually. As you work and get more experience, you just throw it all on the page, right? Your resume just has all kinds of experience. But you can search for that and, you know, search platforms and stuff like that. But what do they really want to do? And what are they passionate about doing? They just have a list of skills so they show up in a search result. But it takes a lot more to dig in and say, hey, you know, where do you really want to be and what's your goals? What are your personal goals, financial goals? Does our company align and will help you achieve those goals? And if you're not having those conversations, then that's you're right. Not going to have an A player that feels like they have ownership in your company for sure.
Yeah. And that last part, and unfortunately, I got split in a second. I know we had some tech issues, but I wanted to share one last part in this FASO model. So we talked about fit, abilities, potential ability. Safety is where people feel safe in the environment, relational safety, and so forth. The last part's ownership. How do you give people a sense of ownership without actually owning the business? And the technique is called psychological ownership. Psychological ownership is where we emotionally feel attached to something, but we don't necessarily have legal interest. And the best example is in a car. When you rent a car, for example, you're told very strictly what you need to do. And if you fail to comply, you'll be punished. Like if there's a scratch or a dent, you'll be fined. If you don't return it with a full tank of gas, they're going to charge you this ridiculous amount to refill it. Well, I have a rule. When we're forced to comply, people will defy. So what do? I rent a car. I do donuts in the parking lot. You know, I'll go through every single puddle I can just to splash because I'm not going to get in trouble for that. But they're telling me to do something, so I get elbow room back at them. Ironically, when we own a car, like I own a pickup truck, when I own my car, I take care of it. I don't abuse it like I would a rental car. But here's the irony. I don't actually own my pickup truck. The bank owns it. I'm making my payments on it. So I don't have legal ownership. So why do I feel that way? Because I have control. I decide when I use it, where I use it. I can personalize it. I program the radio stations. I can put a window sticker on it. And I know it intimately. I know every element of it. When I bought it, I went through 2 hours in the driveway going through the manual to learn what every bell and whistle was. I don't do that with a rental car. I don't even know if it has a manual in it. What we do with our employees is if we give them a degree of control, they take it in direction. We say, hey, listen, we need to achieve X and let's agree to that. But your path in getting there, you determine that. The more control we have, the more we feel ownership. The ability to personalize and make it part of myself, naming it, coming up with strategies, anything where I can ideate and make it more representative of myself, the more I feel I own it. And the more we know about it, the more intimate we are with it, the more we feel we own it. We want to invoke those three elements to give people a sense of ownership.
No, love it. Makes a lot of sense. And I've seen it here at my company firsthand where I have my A players are paving away. Like you can barely keep up with them. Like they're just rolling, running, clear difference.
Yeah.
From them versus others that, you know, are still trying to figure out if this is the place for them. But it rubs off as well. When you see those A players, there's other folks that see those A players are like, hey, that's something special going on over there. And so just amazing things that come out of having a good team and good culture. And this is on us as the leaders to, do these things. It's not just going to happen.
Agreed.
So, well, Mike, man, I appreciate your time. I know you're tight on time, but I appreciate the time you spent with me today. Awesome book, All In. I have the audio and the hard cover.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. Now you just got to sign it, send it back to me. But
you got a deal.
Anyone else that can connect with you, what was the website address for the book?
Yeah, the best place to get it is at my website, which is mikemikalowicz.com. Knowing a spouse, I'll give you a shortcut. Mike Motorbike, as in the motorcycle, mikemotorbike.com. It'll forward you on, nickname from grade school. And my book, All In, but all my other books are there, free chapter downloads. I used to write for the Wall Street Journal. You can get that content too, mikemotorbike.com.
I love it. Well, Mike, thank you so much. Everyone, check out his books. I'm telling you, it'll change your business. There's a lot of application there. And let's get out there. Grow your law firms. And go all in. Let's go.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Managing Partners Podcast. If you could just please leave a review on one of our podcast platforms, we would greatly appreciate it. For any marketing help with your law firm, please consider Array Digital at arraydigital.com.